the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Maroora's Magic Supercoach podcast following round 13, the second of the bye rounds, two down, two to go, and with us to talk what's meant to be the two tricky ones, or will be the two tricky ones, we've got Tommy with us. G'day, Tommy.
How's it going, mate?
I'm good. Well, we're just, as of recording, it is Tuesday night, mid-Sicily trial, so hopefully the news comes through and we'll assess that as it comes, but if not, we'll go on as planned. The weekend just gone, some big scores and big scores all around, particularly for a best 18. And I don't think we've ever been in a situation where there's only been two teams on the bye and we had best 18. So I think this was almost a week. Lots of teams probably wish it was best 22 because we had some good scores drop off, 80s and 90s drop off. And a lot of the difference between the good score and an average score were captain choices. So firstly, how did you go off last week, Tommy?
Yeah, thanks for bringing up the captain's choices. Look, I didn't do too bad, all things considered. So 21-16, which had me just dropping 168 spots. So close enough to par that I'd definitely take it. So had those big scores. I had 20 playing, which meant that I could drop two off. So my lowest score was right up there. I think it was a 78, and then pushed into the 90s, which I was obviously really happy with. And there, I think the difference between a lot of coaches and where I sort of sat was that captain score. I took the Marshall VC on Friday, and it could have been a hell of a lot more. I think I sort of got a little bit greedy. He finished on, I think it was 124, and I was like, or 126, and I was like, yeah, lock that in. He got scaled down to 119, and for those 5 points, decided, nah, I'm going to send it. And I went on Timmy English, and obviously it was looking like a disaster pick at quarter time and even half time, and then had a pretty big second half. So finished on 99. So that was probably the difference between me and some of those better scores. I think if I'd sort of went with the Laird or the Dunkley or a few of those other players that went bigger, it probably would have had me climbing similar sort of rank. So, you learn from those. I probably never will in terms of taking those captain scores, but not a bad week all in all. And just made the one trade. I moved on Zeebel for Brayshaw, which obviously he played well, Zeebel. He's back to that pig role with all the kick-ins. But I think having that long-term play and how it shored up my buys is probably worth it in the end. How'd you go?
You say learning captain. So I'm always a bit soft with my captains. I would take a 119, but it's funny. I reckon come Friday night, you regretted it thinking I was greedy, but then you just saw what Laird did and what Dunkley did. And then the payoff on the upside was so much more. So if you had your time again and just ignore English, like, would you take the punt if it happened again, 119 on a Friday, knowing that we've now got these players who can go 140, 150?
I think it's probably game dependent. There was a lot of good captains options. I've seen English up against Lysette, who probably gives up or has been giving up the most points. He's obviously been really out of form. So I thought it was worth the risk. I think last couple of weeks, it's probably been really hard to pick a really good captain. There hasn't been that many obvious choices. And I guess Laird, Dunkley. But I know a lot of people went on Dawson thinking that he was going to have a really big game, considering the pressure would be down from West Coast and he'd be able to use the footy really well, which is where he's fallen away lately. So, I think it would be round dependent. My original option probably was going to be English into Laird, which obviously would have worked out a lot better. But I just thought Marshall could have gone really big on that Thursday night, and he obviously almost did. So, I think it's going to be round dependent. But I think 120 is a really safe mark and 119 is close enough to it.
Yeah, enough extra 1 point did the difference. As I said, I'd probably take that, but I've lost points in the past. I ended up doing a Dunkley captain, which looked like a masterstroke. I moved off last minute from Laird to Dunkley and wouldn't have thought I was going to give away some points, but I was as a Laird owner, I wasn't too upset with that. So I got a 21.87, which bumped me up. I think I was up 70-odd from 380 to 311, so still around the mark. But as I said, this will be the real test these next 2 weeks of those teams. I imagine teams who didn't have a great side or much preparation or planning could have easily got away with it last week, but I think we'll see those teams who are best structured and have good rookie coverage, bench cover and plan for these buys the next couple of weeks will hopefully rise the ranks. And as you mentioned, yes, Siebel did score well, but his price still dropped, and that round 15 was going to be tricky for all. You've got that extra premium in for that round. I still used my, I think I did three trades. Sorry, I did do three trades last week. What did I do? Oh, so the first one, which has already got me, was I did an Atkins down to Oisin Mullen, who's just news today saying that he's out for, not that I expected him to be counting anyway in terms of best 18, but I'm going to be scrambling to 18, mind you, in round 15. But it was more to just extract as much cash as I can to then allow me to get a Liam Jones to Lachie Neale, who obviously scored unders, but that's two rookie downgrades, one down, one up from a Atkins and a Liam Jones, and walk away with Lachie Neale, who I think's a top eight mid. And then I did a extra move to do a Harry Sharp to Nat Fyfe, who we will talk about in a bit, and he obviously scored really well with a 96. And looks to be a nice move. So that then means, though, that I've got seven trades left, still two rookies to upgrade on my field. I think I'll have, if I had to set best 18 now, I've got a Humphrey and a Fyfe/Johnson/Wardlaw M8, which I need to get upgrading. I've also not got the best 22, and like I've got a few defenders. I've still got a Sheezel I'd like to luxury trade. I've got a Cogs who I'd like to luxury trade. So I can see myself walking out of the buy rounds with two or three, which I'd like to go back. I will go back to see what I had this time last year, and I imagine it will be close to that two or three. How many have you got remaining, and have you got plans to use trades in the next coming weeks, and what that will leave you with come round 16? Firstly, rookies on the field, and then trades remaining.
Yeah. So definitely I've got nine trades coming into this round.
Oh, that's the one thing. I had you for trades all year. If you using one, me using three means I've finally overtaken you.
Yeah, the way my buy planning is shaped out, I'm going to burn through them over the next couple of weeks. So I'll join you on sub four in the coming week. So this week, it's probably just going to be like tentatively plan is, especially with the slim rookies, is going to be Cincotta up to a Nat Fyfe, and then the following week I should be able to do something along the lines of a Briggs, a Phillips, and then into Marich from West Coast, and then up to a Darcy Cameron, and then that'll leave me with 18 on that last buy. And then the following week it should be someone like Eddie Ford, and then Weddle, one down, one up, and I'll jump on Clary to finish off my side, and that should leave me with four trades left in the bank. But still, like you, plenty of players like a Sheezel and a Cogs and a Steele and a Green, who I'm not really happy with, probably aren't going to be in the top of their lines, but I think I'm just going to have to run through that and have Fyfe as sort of that swing mid-forward to do some looping.
Yeah, we'll talk about Steele in a bit, because the news just came out today that he's carrying a knee, which we knew when he did the medial before his bye, but then anyone watching that game, I mentioned before, even him running out to toss the coin, I messaged Xavier saying, mate, get off Steele, because I think he wanted to get him on an over 25 or something, and said, mate, get off Steele. He's not right. Like, he's even hobbling to go and toss the coin. So it's come out that he is dealing with something, seeing some specialists. So plans for him to play, but yeah, hopes of him scoring well aren't great. Whereas Tom Green, like, he got the tag again. It's funny, these players, we've seen it with Noah Anderson early in the year. We see it with Tom Green. We see it with Will Day. The breakout stars who first year they've become on the scene as stars, and they're copying this attention for the first time. They'll take a while to get used to it and work around it, and hopefully it takes a short term rather than long term, because I still have Tom Green being a top eight mid for the back half of the year. So he's not one I'm concerned with. But yeah, with my trades, I've obviously got those two rookies on the field, but I'd really like to get a Sheezel up to a Sicily, and I don't never wish ill on any players in this sort of game, but if he gets suspended for a couple of weeks, it makes that trade off much better. I don't have to worry about doing that move. I'd like to move a Cogs up to a Darcy Cameron, which will be a straight swap and give me some cover in the ruck if needed. And that's then two trades of my seven, leaves me with five. So I've got five trades to upgrade my two rookies on the midfield. So typically one down, one up. That's going to lead me to one or two. So in a tight position, in a tight position, but deja vu, same as last year, and we'll give it a go. The one difference I've got this year than last year, like I've currently got seven decent defenders. I've got Will Day as my seventh defender. I've got both Wardlaw, Humphrey, Johnson and Fife in the midfield, or five forwards. So I've got some decent coverage, which I might be able to, even with an Oisin Mullen not playing, I'll be able to hopefully do a bit of a looping. So it might be a matter of not getting the best 22, which I doubt many teams with the cash gen issues we've had all year be able to get and play that game. Lots of good coaches were doing last year and I wasn't, which is having an extra decent player on the bench and doing that loop. And yeah, as I said, if it's a Fife or a Wardlaw or a Humphrey, you might be able to edge out a close enough score. So obviously the plan for the next coming weeks is to try to get as many as you can on field, whether it's 18 plus. As I said, we got the luxury last week of having to drop off 80s and 90s and teams got away with it. But short memories, just this time last year throughout the bye period, we're scrambling to 18 and we were having to force to take 50s and 60s and 40s. So obviously try to optimise those players on field. You also want to be trading in players who are going to be either rookies or allow you to unlock cash. Bit more premium rookies. We'll speak about some cheaper options soon who you might rely on the next 2 weeks, like you mentioned Nat Fyfe, and then also rely on post buys, because I doubt you're going to use him as a cash generated trade out. He'll be a season long M9 F7 and get in the best player possible in keepers. And ideally, or not ideally, you shouldn't be getting in a keeper unless they have had their bye so far. So what we'll do, we'll talk about players who have come off the bye. Unfortunately, with only two teams off the bye, there's not many relevant players, but a few players who came off the bye the week before have certainly put their hand up, which we'll speak about soon. But in terms of the Geelong and Gold Coast players, I think, well, Tom Stewart's is a lock top six defender, had his bye reasonably priced. I imagine that he'd be a high priority if you haven't owned him to date. There's been a few opportunities to jump on, but now knowing he's got his bye and we've got these tricky buys to come, lots of games at GMHBA. If you haven't got him, do you have any concerns of coaches who would be looking to trade into Tom Stewart?
No, absolutely none. I guess one thing you've got to have in the back of your mind is he's always been known to miss one or two every year through injury or suspension. But apart from that, there's absolutely nothing going against him, really. He's got a break even of 79. I think he's the fourth defender on average per game, and that's including that 18 in round one. So absolutely no concerns. I think he's obviously the number one priority, 10K cheaper than his starting price, and many jumped on at the start and copped that 18. So I think he's probably far and away the best option this week, and certainly in the defender category.
So then the only other real Geelong player of note is Jezza Cameron, who I think as it stands is still a top six scoring or averaging forward. I always find it hardest to trust key position forwards. I know he's a sort of different type of a key position, but he still is. And in a year where we've got your Tarantos, Butters, Dunkley, Rosie, McRae even, I doubt that we're going to see a key position player like him go. You do know, though, he's a super point of difference and he has the potential, particularly if he has an easy matchup, to punch out a Tex Walker like 200. So I think he's one for the brave, but if from now to the end of the year I haven't got him in my top six, would you ever consider trading in someone like a Jezza?
No, I wouldn't. Like, there's a time and a place. I would consider him coming home in like the last four rounds if he's cheap and he's the best you can get to. I think I did that with Tom Hawkins in one of the years that I come top 10. So there's certainly a time for it. And if you can get on a key forward that's in the form, it certainly can pay off, but it's not going to pay off over 10 weeks between now and the end of the year. So I think he's only got, what's that, five scores over 100. Two of them are 150 odd and the other ones are pretty low. So if the rest of the scores, you know, 60s, 65s, 80s, he's not a top six forward and he's not really close to it. And he's might give you a massive score 1 week and it's going to be a real low one next week. He's got a pretty difficult run coming up with Port and Melbourne in the next two as well.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. Gold Coast, there's a couple. So Jared Witts, who obviously burst in the scene last year, showing that he can be a top echelon ruck, and he's backed it up again this year. So I think he's so far averaging 115 for the season, last three, 117. Super unique, only 8 of the top 100 own him, none of the top 10, 6% of the top 1,000. I think the issue is you've either got a Marshall-English combo, who I doubt anyone's worried about that combo, or you might have had a Darcy, in which case you would have gone to a Darcy Cameron, who's looking to be a great move, or a Briggs, who, again, you wouldn't want to be moving off him just yet. So I doubt anyone's going to be in a position where you've got a ruck and you want to trade out. Maybe those Gawn and Grundy owners, if you still have a Gawn and a Grundy. And the reason why Witz is appealing for me is because he is super unique compared to the rest. He's a sole ruck, and it could be your little point of difference going on the way home, particularly if English were to miss one or two like he typically does most years, whereas Witz is very durable. Your thoughts on Witz? I've currently got him as a second ruck in my best 22 from now to the end of the year.
Yeah, I think he's a good option, but I think, I guess, highlighting what you said around what people's ruck combos already are. Like, if you've got a Briggs there, you're certainly not jumping off at this point. It would just be the English. I mean, the Grundy and Gawn, which I'm not sure many would still have. And I still think probably the flexibility that you provided through the Cameron, especially if you've got Briggs on the bench. I'm not sure there's many options that you'd jump on. If you need a ruck, obviously, Cameron doesn't work for your buys and English and Marshall doesn't. He's the best option. I just don't see many people being in that boat. And I still think if you can get the 18 by upgrading elsewhere and holding a no score in the ruck over those buys, you're probably still better off jumping on an English coming out if you don't have him, or even a Marshall, to be honest.
Yeah, English will be a bit cheap too in a couple of weeks with that roll, that price coming out. Quick one on, so Briggs has obviously been terrific. 113 season average, did it again with 114, and two games have been against great ruckman. So he's done it against the Nank, he's done it against Goldie. So he is the real deal. He's done it in VFL level, he did it under 18 level. I think he's their number one choice. Obviously, the concern with getting him, if I think it's a strike of luck for any Darcy owners, because he was a very obvious candidate to jump on him and get the points. Those Marshall-English combo, who were the most common ruck combo, was a trickier decision because you knew you were only going to get one game out of him. You obviously didn't. It's proven to be worthwhile, not just his points from that first game where he was on your field, but the cash in. He's already made 150K in a couple of weeks. And as you said, that can be your avenue to getting Clary. I'm just trying to work out what I could have done. It's very hard to trade out a premium. But in a low cash gen scenario, maybe a play was to pick either an English or a Marshall early buyers and take that cash and put it on someone else's head, just in this case this happened again. Then in terms of Gold Coast, a couple of their midfielders. I mentioned Nyre Anderson earlier, how he struggled with a tag. I think out of his last four games, when coaches really need him the most because he was meant to have that good buy, he's got tagged twice. Got tagged in the Brisbane matchup, got tagged against West Coast, and then he played in the very slippery conditions of Darwin twice. And the most recent, he scored really well and looked great. I feel like he's going to have a big second half of the season. I wouldn't be surprised to see him be a top eight mid from here. His price about where he was to start the year, so I think he can outperform his price. Super unique. I don't mind Nyre Anderson. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like him as an option in the midfield as a pod. He obviously did it in the back end of the year. He was fairly popular to start the year, I guess, and he's back down to his starting price. So, yeah, I really like him as an option. It comes with a little bit of trepidation, I suppose, just based on those tags and the low scores, but we've seen he's got a massive ceiling. And when he's up and about, he is one of the better midfielders in the competition. So I like him as an option. I don't think he's for me, but he certainly covers off both the buys. And if you've already got a Brayshaw and a Neil and some of those other players that have already had their buys, and Nyre Anderson is, you know, in their guns and can help you get through them, I really like him as an option.
So Matty Rowe's the other, his teammate, who his last three, and the conditions certainly suited that, the sloppy weather, because he's a contested beast. I think he leads the comp in tackles, in clearances and in pressure acts, and you'd almost think with those three big stats, which you know how important they are for Supercoach, he'd be averaging more than his 107 season average. But he also comes off his bye looks to have been getting better and better as the season's gone on. I think he's got confidence in his ball-winning ability outside of the big tackle game, which he showed he still had last year but lacked the ball-winning ability. If it's between the two of them where they're both similarly priced and Anderson's actually cheaper, I still think Anderson's going to outscore Rau just because he does it on the outside as well. You'd have any temptation in Matt Rau?
Nah, not for me. It's the inconsistency, massive ceiling, pretty low floor. And I think, you know, any of these players, you wanted them for the whole year. And I think I don't have the stats in front of me. It's more of a vibe, but I feel like when Tuk Miller does come back, probably in the last six or five rounds of the year, that might impact Miller more than it does. I mean, that might impact Rau more than it does Anderson. So, yeah, for me, I just don't think he's a top eight mid where Anderson can be that. So not for me.
All right, so that's not many names there who I think people will be trading into in terms of coming off the bye, but there's players who came off the bye the week before who obviously play the next two who showed something and potentially increased their appeal. The first one, Jack Sinclair. It's funny, every time his centre bound, put the trends out on the Twitter, every time his CBAs are down is when he scores his best, when he runs off half back, had the tag or a bit of attention from Ryan Clark and just absolutely dominated. I think I saw today he has more coaches' votes so far this year than he did last year, and he was All-Australian last year. So he's obviously having a great season, and I feel like very soon, like we've seen last week, his super coach scoring will reflect that. He's $73,000 cheaper than he was to start the season, despite, as I said, having a great season in real life. He's got a high-ish break-even because that low score against Hawthorn is still in his next game. But he, I have him with confidence that he's now going to be a top six defender. So, again, I think he is a decent option. In terms of the other defenders who came off their bye, there's Lloyd, who I know a lot of people jumped on with the easy matchup versus Saints. At three-quarter time when he's playing on a wing, it looked like a shocking call. But got some nice touches late in the game when he moved back to the back line when Blakey went out. Blakey's obviously back again this week, or it sounds like he's back again. And yes, Lloyd had some good form and he's been a gun in the past, but over the last 18 months when Blakey's taken the control of those kick-ins and they're using the ball much quicker out of defence for the Swans, he's been level below those top eight. So for me, I don't think he was an option, or even as it stands now, despite his big last quarter when he moved into his rightful position, I still don't think he's an option. It's Sinclair over Lloyd for me. How about yourself?
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, Lloyd could be a top six mid, I mean, defender, but it requires a lot to go right in terms of where he lines up and how the coach sees the game from week to week. And he started on a wing this week and he hasn't moved up the ground all that much. And obviously Blakey back, you just don't know where he's going to line up. And you want a bit more confidence in the scoring that a player is going to give you when they're out of position. Sinclair's obviously down when he's in the midfield, but he still gives you a higher floor than what Lloyd's going to give you if he's playing on the wing.
Yep, I agree. Ryan, and he's one to show that just because they're a top six or good score for the first half doesn't mean it's going to replicate. Like, it looked in the last few games for Frio, they've made a concerted effort for him to take more of a matchup because he is so good defensively. He played on Jezza Cameron when they played Geelong, and his last couple of games leading to the bye weren't great, and he had the shutdown matchup on Dusty. Obviously didn't do a great job because Dusty, I think, had 24 kicks, but his score of 83 wasn't great, and I imagine he'll be around that 90 to 100 mark and be a level below Young. Conditions didn't really suit him with a wet. Good sign that he took a few more kick-ins for the future, but I've got no confidence in either of those two being top six defenders. In terms of the midfield group, like I mentioned, I jumped on Neil. I think anyone who jumped on a Sarong or a Brayshaw, they all scored fine, but all we kind of, you want that instant sugar hit, which none of us got, but I think they'll be, all three of them should be fine from here to the end of the season. The main talking point, what I want to spend a bit more time on today, is the cheaper options who we kind of want to, or coaches want to, one more look at them and impress. So the first one being a Nat Fyfe. You mentioned he's in your current trade plans. Did you manage to watch that game on the weekend?
Yeah, I did. But he wasn't great early and really showed his class in the second half. And that those impact plays, I think there was that goal assist, I can't remember who he kicked it to, streaming through the middle, that put Freo back into the game. And some of those centre clearances where he just uses his big body and clean possession out. So I think, like, I wanted to see another game from him, and I wanted to see if it was real. Obviously, the CBA's trended up and the scoring is going to be there to a level where he's a really good bench loop option at his price. I think for me, if I didn't have the cash sitting on the bench that would allow me to do my last two upgrades, I probably wouldn't have looked at it. But with Briggsy obviously doing really well, Phillips has sort of surprised me with his cash gen. It just allowed me to probably take on that five and accept that risk, just given that he is going to be that really good swing. And I think as long as his body holds up, we've seen over 4 weeks that he's probably the third choice midfielder. I'm not sure how that is impacted, obviously, when O'Meara comes back, but I think he obviously gives more than O'Meara. So I wouldn't be surprised if that continues and O'Meara probably takes Matthew Johnson's CBA numbers that come up. So I think everything points towards Fife being a good pick with some injury risk, and I'm happy to take that on given the scoring that he could produce.
Yeah, no, that's a very important point you make, because I don't think, obviously you look at his history, it's not the same Nat Fife. So I don't think you want to go into round 16 with him being your M8. So it's a bit of a luxury move to get him, whether it's going to be a bit of cover on the bench post these buys or doing a bit of looping. So make sure you do have the buys, the trades there and the cash available, as you said, on the bench to still be able to get a full primo team before he becomes consideration. If you're completely strapped for cash and have a bench of red dots and don't think there's any way you'll be able to get a full primo team, then he also becomes a bit of an option, because you're not going to see 96s from him each week. But yeah, watching him closely, I forgot how good he is in the contest. So he only attended, or not only, but 54% of the centre bounces. But every time he was in there, he either won that first possession and clearance, or he sort of bumped a opposition player across or laid a big bump and Dockers won the clearance. I'd like to see the stats on how many clearances they won when he was in there. He had a big impact and made me think, particularly towards the last quarter back end when he wasn't in there, that they'll watch that and think we need to get him in there a bit more. He probably played a bit more forward than I thought. So he had 11 contested possessions from his 17 disposals. He's a natural super coach scorer. Even back in his heyday when he used to score 90 or 95 fantasy points, he'd score 125, 130 super coach, purely because they are always contested possessions and it has high impact. So I'm, as you would have heard from last week, I'm a believer that he's a great pick. He was slowly considering him at the start of the season when he was told he was going to be a permanent forward. He's now cheaper, and we now know that experiment's over and he's going to be used in the midfield. No Aish this week as well. We will hopefully help. And I think he's going to continue being, at the very least, a 55-60% CBA player and get you the 80s, 85s, which, yeah, if there's injuries at the back end of the year with these low trades, it's going to be very handy to be able to plug and play him as either cover or even that emergency loop. So I'm a fan of his. Marcus Winhager, big scores in the juniors, low price given that he has been sub a few times. Didn't score well. He's only scored a 42 but got some inside minutes. I think, unlike Fifey, where you can rely on him for the rest of the year, there's every chance, we saw it early in the year, that he wasn't in their best 22, that's a big price to pay for someone who might not even score or play well. So the old age theory in Supercoach is, at this time of year, when you're doing upgrades, your downgrades, you want to almost get the bare minimum price so then you can make sure you can get that good upgrade. So for me, that rules out a Windhager. But the one who is cheap is a Sheldrick, who it'll be interesting to see if he keeps his spot with Parker coming back and keeps his role. Looking at the midfield mix, like Papley got a lot of time in there. Heaney got a lot of time in there. So I can see Parker coming back in and even Mills in due time, and Sheldrick potentially keeping his inside role. He got a few clearances. He's a bit more expensive, 158K. Not sure what you think about Sheldrick.
Yeah, I like Sheldrick. I think he's probably the best option this week. One, given his price, two, obviously that scoring potential that he put up on the weekend. Like, I'm not sold on him. Like, the job security's I don't think, great. I think this it was his third game on the weekend. He was subbed out in the first, subbed on in the second, and then obviously wasn't subbed on the weekend, but he still had a very low time on ground. I think it was about 58 or 61 percent, and obviously his points per minute were really good in that time, and he was playing through the middle. He doesn't have a bye, so that makes him a really good option based on his price and the lack of other options. So for me, if you need a downgrade, I think he's the best option. But I'm I'd be a little bit nervous around his job security, but I think he definitely should have done enough to hold his spot.
Yeah, I think if we don't get rookies named this week and you need to get someone at that price, at someone cheaper than that sort of five price range to get your upgrade, then it probably is, he probably is your rookie, because even looking at those on the buy, whether it's a Harvey Harrison, there's doubt that, and I did it last week with a Oisin Mullen, that there's doubt that the player after their buy is going to be in their team. There's always players coming back from injury. You imagine that the West Coast rookie, Marek, will hold his spot, kicking a couple of goals, and they've got no numbers on the track. But if you need to get someone and get those extra numbers for this week, I think he will be the rookie option. I'll put this guy with the cheap guys, but just looking at him, he's probably should be talked about with the premiums. Last three average 111. Nasaya Wanganeen Malira. We all knew how good he was because we were watching from an impact of Sinclair's point of view, and how he's lost some kick-in and distributing duties to Wanganeen Malira. But he's shown in the last three games that he's got a real ability to also score himself. He's cheap, 460K, but as I said, you're not getting players like that this time of year to be a cash generator or bench cover. He's going to have to be your D6. Do you think he can sustain it, knowing that Sinclair's spending more time down back, or if you are short on cash, he might be a way to complete your team?
Personally, not for me. I think he's a little bit too speculative. If you're a believer and he's the best you can do and you're finishing your team and you're low on trades, I think that sort of scenario makes him a decent risky pick. But I think for me, like he hadn't turned all year before his last three, which is obviously a concern. There's been an improvement and an upward trajectory to his scoring, but that is still really low. Obviously, if you started him, you wouldn't be happy with that. Kick-ins haven't dramatically changed in terms of going up over the last three games, so it's not necessarily a role-impacted improvement. I think at his price, he obviously needs to be a keeper. So I think for me, he's not an option to finish your team. I think if he's a short-term play that's going to fill these last two buys, you have the trades and could potentially be re-flipping him, maybe to a Sicily if he misses three or something along those lines. You could potentially look at it, but I just don't think you buy into Wanganeen Malira expecting to get, you know, that 105 average between now and the end of the year. I think, you know, mid-90s is probably the ceiling on that actual average, and for me, that's not someone that I'd want to buy into at his price.
Yeah, you're right. Season average 81. We're all trying to, we'll talk about them in a minute, tempted to jump off those people, defenders around that price point who we don't think are keepers, whether it's a Zeeble, Sheez, or Will Day, and likely those who are interested in a Wanganeen Malira, yes, you get an extra game out of him because those other three I mentioned have their buyer to come, but who's to say that he's going to outscore any of those three on their given day? So I'm with you. I think the six defenders now are looking more and more clear who the best are, and that being a Dacos, Dawson, Sicily, if playing Stewart. I've then got Jack Sinclair in there as well, and then Doherty to bounce back. But having said that, especially if Sicily does miss, unlike last year where they were pretty clear those top five, there is a bit of a drop-off. So it's probably a big blanket over the rest, and that's why in a team in my position where I don't have a heap of trades, if I have to keep a Sheezel or Will Day, and if somehow I can do a bit of looping around those to try to get the best, it might not be the worst avenue to go about it and wait till Sicily does come before taking that jump on someone else like a Wanganeen Malira, who could go back to his season average of the 80s. In terms of, just quickly, any other defenders I didn't mention you think could be a top six other than, so I've got Doherty in there as well, but obviously the way Carlton, one, they've got their bye next week, and the way Carlton have been playing, you'd be brave to jump on now. So yeah, Dacos, Dawson, Sicily, Stewart, Doherty, Sinclair, Doherty is how I currently rank them.
Yeah, I think Caleb Daniel obviously has to come into the discussions. He's someone that I guess was around that top six, top 10 mark probably a couple years ago, a few years in a row, and that's because of his really elite kicking, and he's moved into the midfield, playing much more up around the ball, which is probably better for the Doggies in terms of their game style, because he's not really a defender. He's not going to really be able to lock down anyone, really, given his size. So I think he's fourth total points on the year as a defender after getting DPP, and then six on average with 104. So he's definitely in that next bracket. He's really highly priced at 615, and he's got a buy coming up, so definitely not someone I'd be looking at, but just think Caleb Daniel probably deserves some love, and he's only in 4.9% of teams, so he's definitely been a really good pod for people that have jumped on early.
No, you're right. He is one I've slept on, so he's had a 104 average in the past, so he's obviously shown he can do this. But yeah, last three, 137, no Richards, no JJ for a little bit. He could be that one, and yeah, ownership's even less, 0% of the top 1,000, 0% of the top 100, 0% of the top 10, and putting up these monster scores. You need to have a lot of cash there, but again, we always talk about this big second half here and why ranks can change so much. It's because teams without much cash or trades up will be stuck with their team. Like last year, I was stuck with a Crisp and a Short, who were a long way off the top six scorers, and teams with trades could flip those and get players like a Caleb Daniel and really come charging home. So good call there. Other cheaper players for this week, I had Mullen there. That just really sinks in, the fact that I traded him last week. Milliken, he's on the bubble. We know what he is. He's a negating defender who doesn't like the ball in his hands, doesn't score great, but he's a pulse and playing the next two, if named, but a bit more of a price to spend. I think if he was 120K, then it'd be almost a no-brainer. What's your thoughts on paying 170K for Lewis Milliken?
170K for a pulse? Not for me. I think, obviously, if Sheldrick's named, you certainly jump on him at a cheaper price. I don't really see what would warrant jumping on Milliken unless you were absolutely desperate, already had a Sheldrick. Didn't want Windhager. I think I'd rather Windhager over him. And obviously, you know, what is it? It's like 100K to get up to Fife. I'd much rather try and find that if you could and go down to a lesser trade than have Milliken there. Because there is still some defenders come back from Sydney, and does he hold his spot? Who knows? And even then, he's not going to give you any scoring or cash. So, no.
What if you needed to, because yeah, as you said, sometimes all good and well having a heartbeat saying you've got 19 playing, but you've got someone who's going to score you 40 or 50. It's likely to get dropped off anyway or not count. What's your thoughts? So if you did need a defender, so this was me last week, I wanted to trade out Atkins and Jones, so I had both in defence, and I wanted to trade in a premium mid in Lockie Neal. So my defender had to be the rookie. There was none there, which is why I then went O'Sheen, Muller. Would you rather, if you had a playing D, like is it too early in the year to chuck out some throwaway defenders and just pick up someone at 101K in defence if you've got a playing D7 already, just to get that extra cash to make the upgrade you need, or you'd hold a fire on that upgrade and wait till you've got the cash with a genuine downgrade?
So you're asking, like, just going down to a 102?
Yeah. So say if you wanted cash, yeah. If you wanted someone to say Noah Anderson this week, and the way you could get there was trading Will Day in defence to a rookie defender and then going up elsewhere, and you could get a Milliken or you could just get a 102K-er in defence who's not playing, just to save that extra money for future weeks, knowing that Milliken's not going to be on your ground come round 16 anyway.
I think you could definitely jump on a 102-er at this point, especially if you've got a decent rookie in the other spot, one that allows you to do some, you know, looping, even if it is some speculative looping. You've got a Weddle there or a Sincotta, and it's Day. So you can be looping those two potentially, at least you're having a look at the scores. And your team should be close enough to fully upgraded and especially coming out the buys, that you're not going to need the cash that Melican might generate. So I think it's fine to do that. It obviously leaves you a little bit short on cover, but personally, I'd rather do that, make sure that I'm getting the better upgrades on the other end, and you know, really kind of saving your trade. Because if you are going to do a day down to a Melican and then someone else up to a Noah Anderson, it's pretty sideways. So you're not actually advancing your team. I'd rather advance my team and have a non-playing player or someone that might get a game down the track.
Yep, I agree. Other trading targets who are yet to have their buy but are looking appealing. There's two who have their buy this week. We'll speak about them in a bit shortly. We'll talk about them now. Ben Keys and Darcy Cameron, who I think we'll talk about more come next week when they're off their buy. Keys will have a bit more of a debate next week on him, but I think Darcy Cameron's really looking prime. His time on ground's been slowly ticking up, and he's put up that decent score against Gorn and Grundy without many hit-outs. So I think he's going to outscore a lot of those current forwards we've got, and with that little swing, if you've got a mid-forward, a ruck forward as R3, I think he could be a great play. But we'll save them for next week. The two who are playing this week but still with a buy to come, Harry Himmelberg and Taron Thomas. Firstly, your thoughts on trading in a player this time of year when we're struggling for 18 or 19, who is missing the week next week. Do you wait till after their buy? And then individually, what's your thoughts are on firstly Himmelberg, then Thomas?
I wouldn't be trading in... And I suppose there's a way that it would work, but personally, I wouldn't be trading into a player that was going to guarantee that I'm getting a donut. I don't think it's worth it in the long term. I don't think it's worth the cash saving that you would get from Himmelberg if he scores a 90 this week. What's he going to price you out by, you know, 30K? I don't think that's worth it to cop a donut from someone that you're in that position that you're probably hoping for from an 80-plus score from. So, personally, not for me. Obviously, if you can cover it, I think Himmelberg's a really good option. And I think that goes for the same for Taron Thomas. So as long as you can cover that buy, I think they're both decent options. But I wouldn't be trading into him if it was going to give you a donut.
Yeah, okay. So when you say cover the buy, so if you still think you get 18 in round 15, then you'd do it. You wouldn't still even want to have 19 just for that little security blanket of having one drop off.
Because I guess in the scenario I've got in my head, it probably gives you 19 this upcoming round and 18 the following week, or it might be flipped, I suppose, if you held off. So for me, I don't think it matters all that much, bit of a muchness. It's obviously better to have 19 in each, but I think what Harry Himmelberg presents is obviously someone that can be a top six defender and was in the back end of last year. Maybe almost a more favourable role this year that it's been flagged for, where he's kind of off half back and sweeping, so he's a little bit higher up in terms of taking those intercept marks. I think he can easily go back to that 110 type guy if his role holds, and from all indications from the team and the media, it seems like it will. And you're really getting him at a bargain basement price, 124K down on his starting price, and that includes the first half of the year that he played key forward. So, I think it's a really good pick. I like him as a pick. I just can't get into him because it would be trading in a donut for me, and I think that goes against everything that I'd the way I play this game. Personally, if I took a donut in that round over a rookie, maybe it ends up being a much better pick having Harold Himmelberg in the side for the rest of the year, but it's not for me, but I really like him as an option.
Yeah, so what 111 is what he averaged post-buy last year when he switched to defence. And as you said, his price at 91 coming into the season because he was forward to start the season. So he thought he could have been cheap if he got the forward role even as priced at 91, whereas he's now priced in the 70 or low 70, 72, down 124K. I think the switch is real, hearing it's now three games he's been playing. If he got that one where he got concussed and then had the other game. So I think it's real. The quotes, I believe, the fact that they even moved a Lockie Keefe down forward this week to keep Himmelberg down back. And as you said, he wasn't playing a key defender on a big play. He was playing on a small and wanting to jump off. Just the two differences from this year to last year is firstly that there was no Whitfield and no Ash playing in defence last year, so he pretty much had it all to himself back there. Plus, they had a coach who was happy to play a bit of the high possession, slow football, and Himmelberg just kept kicking it or getting kicks to himself. Whereas this new coach, we assume he's trying to roll out a bit more of the Richmond game style of run and gun and use the ball quickly down back. So I think he might be hampered a little bit there. But yeah, in terms of we're trying to find that D6 and who's that going to be. And if you can get someone at this really cheap price point, and even if he does give you 100 from here, I think you're going to be or prove to be a great pick. So he's the one he's going to go up, as you said, break even 27, go up a bit this week. I think it's worth waiting till post his buy, pay that a little bit extra and have those extra numbers, because you might not have seen it in the first 2 weeks of the buy, but I think teams with a weak bench and poor planning are really going to get found out. So I think you should capitalise on extra numbers the next couple of weeks and then dabble with it. Taron Thomas, similar boat, but the difference with him at his best, he was playing a 50-50 split midfield forward. I think with these young gun mids at the Roos, being an LDU and Simkin who's going to have to come back, Wardlaw's not moving out of there. They look like they want to keep giving Sheasel time. Power's been good, and your boy Phillips, I think Thomas is going to be restricted to purely a... I just saw he got 62% centre bounces. I thought he was just a pure forward. So he's been getting some midfield minutes. So maybe that is an attractive point at that price. But yeah, I don't trust him as much week to week. But if you can do something like that five move and use him as a bit of a play, but I wouldn't be trading into him knowing that you're going to be one short come next week. So then it comes to trade out options. Obviously, the opposite candidates are those who are rookies you've owned from teams on their buy. But like me, like as I said, I'm short round 15. I'm actually holding Jacob Van Rooyen one extra week to get that extra forward come next week. So it shouldn't be as simple as just trade out the rookie on their buy. Make sure you look at your planning and see how that's going to impact you the next week. But what's your thoughts on a Will Day on his buy? Obviously been underwhelming since we all jumped on mid-season, but had his best game for a while on the round just gone. And a bit like Anderson, you look at his last 3 weeks before then, he's had excuses, had been tagged twice. I think there was a couple of games he had 30 touches but just didn't have good kicking efficiency when normally he's pretty good by foot. So there's a world where he can go back to being a 100 averaging defender. Is he in your trade plans to trade out now? Is he in your trade plans to trade out after round 15 when you get to a complete side in round 16? Or is your view to hold him the rest of the year either at D6 or even as a bit of a loop?
So my view on Will Day is to hold until my team's fully upgraded. So I went obviously on Zeeble last week, and after one really poor game, it showed that probably wasn't the right decision. It was the right decision for you because you went 2 weeks early, but I lost the cash. So I don't think that was necessarily the right player to move on. And there's quite a number of players that, you know, I've got in my team that we're going to talk about, and I think a lot of coaches have in their team where it isn't certain on which one the best is to trade out. So I think either or any of these, probably you're probably looking at post fully upgrade, unless you need them to field 18, need to trade them on to field 18. I think Will Day for me is probably the lesser of the ones that you would want to trade out. He's kind of the third, equal fourth, equal third preferred CBA midfielder. I think he's got the talent to put up big scores, and it really only takes probably one really big score from him to really boost that average to a place that it's a lot more respectable. Like you said, there was some rationale around the reason that he's been producing lower types of scores. So for me, I'm more than happy to hold him until things wash out, and maybe he can be a luxury upgrade once I'm fully upgraded. But I want to make sure that I'm moving on the player that is going to definitely be that worst performer.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we'll see some better scores. Mind you, I've been saying it for a fair few weeks now. He keeps going his 80s and 90s, but I think we'll see a nice stretch from Will Day, and just that extra number next week I think is going to be really handy. As you mentioned, Zeeb, I think if you hadn't done it now, you've got him all year because he dropped again. Even though he put up a big score, he still dropped another big chunk of cash, so he's there all year. And then a Sheasel who... he's just a good footballer. He obviously rolls up and down. Ideally, I want to be moving him on to, say, if Sicily comes back. I've just got to check if any news has come from Sicily. But I'm now at the stage where I'm worried I'm not going to be able to complete my team at all. So he's going to be a last priority move on. And then a Cogs, we'll talk about more him more next week, because he's not going to drop a heap in price because he put up a decent score last week. His role's there, but I think it's going to be more relevant come into his buy, whether we do that flick to a Darcy Cameron and a luxury trade, which as it stands now, I'm toying with that move. Nothing on Sicily. Nothing
still
on
going.
Sicily. You're a Sicily owner. Just assume you are, and he's out, just because we're going to wrap this up shortly. If he's out for 3 weeks, what do you do?
Trade. There's too much cash on his head. I think you have to, especially if you're not going to field 18. It's really rough for the owners. He's D1, really. Him and Dacos, but I think over the past couple of weeks, Sicily's been in that really favourable role that probably makes him D1 between now and the end of the year. But if he misses three, he's got the bye. That's 4 weeks with no $600,000 player on your bench. And I just don't think anyone could hold it. I think the only reason to trade is if you're probably going to be on... the only reason not to trade is if you're going to be on three or even two trades post fully upgrade. I think there's an argument for holding then, because he might be able to make up the points. But I think in most situations, he's going to have to be a trade at 3 weeks. I think at two, it's a bit of a different scenario. At one, it's definitely a hold. Two, it's a bit team dependent and how many trades you got.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? Even one means he misses these two tricky buy rounds with that big cash on the head. But who do you trade down to? Because Dawson has his buy, Dacos has his buy, Doherty has his buy, Caleb Daniels got his buy to come. So we're talking about trying to identify those top six defenders. There's not really anyone there who you'd want to be sliding across to and jumping on. And maybe that could be the way to get to Himmelberg, and the cash generated from that might get you a good upgrade on the other end as well. But a few scenarios to play out there. Obviously, the trade insights come out Thursday morning before the round kicks out, and by then I'll know, unless they keep appealing and appealing, which happened last year with Cripsy, I'll know the result there, and I'll be able to put my final findings in the trade insights and then the quickfire Q&A on the Friday. Looking ahead to moves this week, so as it currently stands, as much as I'm addicted to trading, I don't think I'm going to trade. I'm like 7K short of going a Van Rooyen straight to a Himmelberg, which I would have liked to do. But other than that, I'm fielding 19 now without a Oisin Mullen. And my rookies, I'm pretty comfortable with in that 19, a Wardlaw, a Johnson, a Humphrey. I've got a Fife, so obviously there's every chance that they're going to come back to earth and get 50s, but I'm happy enough rolling out this week without using a trade. The only question is that does that then hamper my ability to get full primo come round 16? I'll probably have to use three the week after, then two the week after, which will get me to, two trades left. And we'll be fingers crossed the rest of the year. Tom, you mentioned yours, so it could just be the 1-5.
Yeah, I think it will be. The players that I could move on, I guess Weddle, but there's no defender rookies to downgrade to. I probably would have ended up going potentially Weddle to Oisin Mullen if he was picked, but I think for me, just doing that Sin Cotter to Fife and then let those other rookies fatten up and move them on next week in my second last upgrade. So yeah, just the one for me, and should have 19 playing with Angwin on the bench, who I should be able to do a little bit of looping with.
Jack Steele, I know I mentioned him earlier, if he is said, it's said he's meant to play, so obviously you're not trading into him. Anyone watching that game, even if you just saw the stats and saw his last half and thought, okay, he's back, let's get into him at this very cheap price. His price at less than 100 for a player has been 120 at times before. I certainly wouldn't be jumping into him, but on the flip side, if you're an owner, he still showed his... He was poor, and even his second half he wasn't great, but he just showed he's that sort of player who gets that contested possession plus lays big tackles that he can get be a premier scorer in the comp. And again, looking at the eight midfielders, they're not screaming at you who the bottom end are, so I wouldn't be trading off him, even if he were to miss 1 week, unless it looks like you're going to wear a donut. So my current top eight, they're in the insights last week, but it's Oliver, Bont, Laird, Petrarca, Merritt, Neil, Liberatore, and then I've still got a Tom Green there, being a bit stubborn with that. But Jack Steele, obviously you've got concerns as an owner also, but you haven't got the luxury to try to move him on like me?
No, I don't. I think those players that we were talking about before the day, Cogs, Sheasel, Zeebel, Steele's firmly in that bracket and probably the most disappointing at the moment. And, you know, he's got an injury that is leading to some of these really low scores. So I'm going to let it all play out through the bye still. You know, he wouldn't be playing if it was going to cause long-term injury. And I think we've seen with Brayshaw that I'm not sure what he was carrying, but I assume it was something similar given that he was able to play through it. It wouldn't have been a PCL. It wouldn't have been cartilage. It must have been something similar, or maybe some patellar tendonitis. I'm not sure. But either way, these overuse type injuries or impact injuries in the MCL's case with Steele, they are going to come good, and just hope that it comes good sooner rather than later and you can put some big scores on the back end of the season.
Beautiful, Tommy. That's it from us tonight. Thanks again for your time, and thanks, members, for the support. As I mentioned, Thursday night footy again, so those insights will come out on Thursday morning, and then the quickfire Q&A if something drastic happens, come teams on Thursday on the Friday morning. But thanks again for your time, Tommy. We'll chat to you next week. Good luck this week.
Cheers, mate. Good luck, everyone.